Christmas Platter is proud to partner with one of our favorite companies, Shady Rays, over at ShadyRays.com. Shady Rays has been the only sunglasses I've used for years now. A lot of you guys know I carry mail for a living, so through the rain, snow, the wind, sleet, sun, you name it, I've carried through it. And even through vacations in the Rockies and on the beach, I've always had my Shady Rays with me. I'm very particular about my sunglasses and love my Shady Rays. They fit great, they're durable, and they're reasonably priced. On top of that, they have a great lifetime warranty that you really need to check out, and it is as good as they say it is. But more importantly, if you buy a pair of sunglasses, that also buys 20 meals for the hungry through Feeding America, which I just love it when companies are have a conscience and have a charitable aspect to them. And you, as a Christmas Clatter listener, go over to ShadyRays.com, use promo code XmasClatter in checkout to receive 25% off and pick up a great pair of sunglasses for you or a gift for someone you love. ShadyRays.com, promo code XmasClatter for 25% off. Shady Rays, now the official sunglasses of Christmas. Welcome to Christmas Clatter, the podcast that celebrates everything that makes Christmas special. Join us on Facebook and Instagram at Christmas Clatter Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Clatter Podcast. Email us at ChristmasClatterPodcast@gmail.com or visit our website at ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. Welcome again to Christmas Clatter. I'm Todd Killian. Here we are in our second week of weekly episodes, and it seems like I know it's only second week, but man, it seems like that week went by fast. Maybe because I'm just used to putting out an episode every couple weeks or so, so it just shortened the time on me, but we're here sprinting our way to Christmas. Halloween is up next. To let you guys know, I had a poll up a few weeks ago about two Halloween movies I hadn't seen. One was Hocus Pocus. The other was A Night Before Christmas. I'll let you guys decide on which one I should watch for a bonus episode for Halloween. The overwhelming winner was Hocus Pocus. Look out for that bonus episode. It'll come out Friday the 30th, the day before Halloween, where you'll hear my review of Hocus Pocus, along with a very special co-host to join me. Anthony Crusoe from Tis the Podcast will help me break down everything Hocus Pocus. So that's coming up at the end of the month. I want to extend a thank you for everyone that is participating in the Christmas Clatter Christmas Puzzle Exchange. Registration for that's now closed, but we have a good group of people that wanted to be a part of that. And if you have not received an email from me yet, you will be receiving one shortly. With the person who you're supposed to send the puzzle to and some clarifications on the directions of that. So for all you guys that signed up, thank you. And if you missed out on the puzzle exchange, had such a good response, I could see this being a annual event. So good chance you'll be able to catch it in 2021. Also, be sure to head over to our Facebook and Instagram accounts at Christmas Clatter Podcast. I started a mini blog series called Christmas with Purpose. It's just some guidelines, some helpful hints on how to make sure you plan for Christmas ahead of time with this year and everything in flux. Just a good idea to be a little bit more diligent on how we prepare for Christmas. Not that I want to get rid of complete randomness that happens at Christmas, which a lot of fun comes in that, but sometimes it just helps to be a little bit more prepared. That way you're just not flying by the seat of your pants and the holidays sneak away from you. So head on over to Facebook and Instagram for that. Step one has already posted for this week. For today's episode, I had a wonderful talk. It's a Do You Hear What I Hear episode on Motown Christmas, but I'm joined by a very special guest, Scott from Jingle Jank. If you've never heard of Jingle Jank, they're one of the new podcasts I talked about a few weeks ago. Scott is joined by his best friend Jay, and they find the wild, wacky, weird, and whiniest Christmas songs on YouTube and break them down for you. And Scott joined me this time, and we're going to go through not the weird, wild, or wacky, but a little bit more off-Broadway offerings that Motown has given us as far as Christmas music. Enjoy our Do You Hear What I Hear? Motown edition. All right, joining me here on Christmas Clatter is Scott from Jingle Jank Podcast, and we are going to be doing a special Do You Hear What I Hear? Motown edition. Scott, thanks so much for joining me. We'll pull something out of the hat of Tis the Podcast, and what's your history with Motown in general?
I don't know a lot of the history of Motown. I hope you can fill a lot of that in for me. Mostly, I think I got into it in my early teens because they played it a lot on the show Murphy Brown. Do you remember that show?
Yes, I remember that show very well.
So I got exposed to a lot of that, and I really enjoyed it. I don't think my parents were all that into Motown. They didn't have any problem with it, but it wasn't something we listened to a lot. And I don't know, in the last couple of years, with the availability of music the way it is, you can just, you know, listen to one and find yourself into another and go down the rabbit hole of it. And it's been a lot of fun, and it's going to be really exciting to talk to you about Motown and Christmas today.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Murphy Brown. My dad spent 40 plus years as a television broadcast engineer, and he worked for the local CBS affiliate, and which Murphy Brown played on. And when Murphy Brown went into syndication as a, when a TV show would go into syndication, that show would send local TV stations like merch or swag, you know, to kind of get them to buy the show for their syndicated spots. And he came home with this cassette tape, and it had the Murphy Brown logo on it. But when you open it up, it was just a solid white cassette tape with like typewriter letters that said Murphy Brown Volume 1 or something like that. And he gave it to me, and it was all the Motown, you know, greatest of Motown tracks. It had like My Girl on there, and Superstition, and Heard It Through the Grapevine. It's just the big Motown numbers. And I fell in love with that stuff. And I fell in love with the bass guitar of that. It just really spoke to me that in a way that really changed my life, because from then on, I had this desire to start playing bass guitar, you know, just like the guy I heard on the radio or on the cassette tape, who ended up being a guy named James Jamerson. And that's always stuck with me. And I've long ago lost that cassette tape, and I've always been kind of on the hunt for it, but you know, without many clues to go by, it's kind of eluded me a little bit, but.
Oh, that would be so cool to be able to find that. And it's ironic that you say the bass guitar, because you and I started talking about this episode that we're doing right now a couple of weeks ago, and I started listening to this. I actually ordered my first bass guitar this morning. I've played guitar for many years, but I've been really interested lately in the bass, and I want to learn. And heck, I've got a lot of time on my hands right now. Right. So it seemed like a really fun thing to do. So very prescient.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about Motown is the bass was never really played like that before, with those grooving beats, and not just playing the like the 1/5 oomp bop stuff. And you know, there were bass players before that that kind of did some stuff, but they were always on the outskirts of like jazz and not really in mainstream music. And Motown was able to bring it into homes across America. It was like really the first time the bass was heard like that, and it's never been the same. It's never been the same instrument since. And
and listening through these tracks, to let people know, we are talking specifically about the Ultimate Motown Christmas. It was a 2008 release, I believe. And it's 51 tracks in total. Some of those tracks are like Happy Holidays messages from some of the stars of Motown, you know, wishing their best to you and all that. But it is a great compilation of Motown tracks from the early days of Motown through some more modern Motown stuff like Boyz II Men, and I believe Brian McKnight's on there.
Yep,
if I remember correctly. So we're not going to go through all 50 plus
tracks.
No,
it's an hour and 54 minutes long. So almost 2 hours of goodness. And as you mentioned, there are a lot of, oh, this is Smokey Robinson, Happy Holidays.
Right.
It was a little fun to listen to. I don't think I would put that in the playlist itself if I was picking out songs from it. But it's going to be a lot of fun. We picked out 6 songs today of the, 51 that are on the album.
And a lot of the songs on there, you hear every Christmas on the top 40 Christmas radio. They're just classic standards and of that Motown era that just hit home and that you've heard your whole life. You've never known a Christmas without them, even though you don't maybe never know exactly who they are or what they were. But we picked out some that maybe just might be a little bit off the beaten path a little bit. Because some of those songs are so well known, it's kind of like what more can we add to them? They're ingrained in everybody's mind. And so we've got 6 of them.
On my show, Jingle Jank, we find offbeat and obscure Christmas music on YouTube and we showcase that. And I feel like if I play a song that you've heard before, I'm not doing my job right. I'm not doing a good job of research. So the songs that we have today are by artists that you'll know well, Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder and the Four Tops. Mm-hmm. But hopefully the individual tracks are ones you're not familiar with.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. For me, it's kind of hard because I listen to Christmas music so much even throughout the year. I used to always give myself a break, but after last Christmas, I felt like I didn't get enough Christmas music. So I kept listening through it off and on throughout the year. So a lot of these songs, to me, they feel like old standards, but then I have to pull back and say, not everybody's eyeball deep in the Christmas culture year round. So,
right. I like to say that I'll listen to the real classics during what we would call the holiday season. I'll listen to my Frank Sinatra, my Bing Crosby. I'm not that interested in listening to them in April or May. That's when I go seeking out new stuff.
Yes.
So even though the artists themselves today aren't going to be new, I know there's a few songs that I wasn't familiar with. So at least some of your listeners should have their eyes open to some fun new stuff.
Yeah. Let's just get off on a good podcast tangent. You sounds like you're a whole lot like me. Throughout the year, I'll hit some familiar stuff here and there, but I'm like you, I'm trying to dig out something that I hadn't heard before or something new. But then say after Halloween, I'm all into like the modern and pop Christmas stuff, the upbeat stuff, Mariah Carey and, Meghan Trainor and Michael Bublé and Pentatonix and that kind of party, Christmas party kind of thing. But then it seems like as it draws closer to Christmas, my music goes to the more classic crooners.
It's like a funnel. So you're specializing. Yeah, I like that.
And then that week between Christmas and New Year's, it's all classic crooners, nothing else. Just that's when me and my family we will puzzle all year, but we'll pull out the puzzle on the table and TV goes off and it's just you just have Frank Sinatra in the background singing Christmas songs and everybody's working a puzzle and it's just such a stress relief and a way to decompress.
Definitely. And we usually leave the TV on, but that's because we'll put on the music choice station.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll listen to that Christmas. And I don't know about you, but the older I get, the more befuddled I am with the artists that are being.
Yeah.
And these are the pop artists of the day. Mm-hmm. You're like, who? Who is this? Same thing. You watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, which I absolutely love. I'm an 8-year-old inside. in the second half of the parade, they start bringing out the artists singing Christmas music. And you're like, who is this person? Once upon a time, you knew all the artists, you knew everybody. And now it's just, oh my goodness, you know, bring on Mannheim Steamroller, please.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. It's tough. I still try to keep on top of it as best I can, but it just too many things, get too much adulting going on around here for that to happen.
Yeah. And I've been using bandcamp.com lately,
yeah,
with a lot of independent artists. And I just go looking for people that have never been, you know, either published or they don't have a label. They're just people that put out music because they love it. And I find some amazing Christmas music on there. And the trick is, this is an inside secret for you and all the listeners. They don't have a Christmas category to search on. So what I do is I take a song title that is obviously Christmas and could not be ambiguous with another one, like The Little Drummer Boy. There is no pop song called The Little Drummer Boy. You know it's Christmas. So you search for that, and then you'll find artists, and then you can back into their whole albums, and usually those are Christmas albums. Right. And there is no shortage of music on there. So it's a lot of fun. Not everything is great, of course, but there is so much amazing stuff I have never heard before. And that's kind of one of my new passions, is to find these independent artists.
Yeah. And there, like you said, there are a lot of amazing people and that do that kind of thing. Well, let's kind of get back on track with looking at this Motown. You mentioned it. You want to start off with The Little Drummer Boy, since you mentioned that song? Or
sure. Give me 1 second to cue it up here.
Yep.
I had my notes in a different order than you.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. So the first song we're going to listen to today, we'll introduce it. We'll listen to about a minute of it. I think that's about the most we can put in without worrying about the copyright lawyers swarming after us. So we'll listen to about a minute, and then we'll talk about what we thought about it and the history of it. Sound good?
Yep.
All right. Sounds so this good. This is The Little Drummer Boy by The Temptations. Right, that was Little Drummer Boy by The Temptations. Todd, since it's your show, why don't you go first and let us know what you thought of that?
Well, to start off, Temptations was one of my favorite bands growing up. I talked about that Murphy Brown album, and that led me to that next Christmas getting a cassette tape that was all the greatest hits from The Temptations. And this song, I really like it, but it's way different than any other Temptations songs that I ever had listen to, because first of all, there's five members of the Temptations, and they all had their different parts, but they rarely all sang in unison throughout a whole song. And there might be a few parts in the song that they might have split off, but for the most part, it's all five singing all the time. And the music's really low key and simple. And it just lets their voices and their harmonies ring out. And it's really cool, but really was unexpected. When I first saw Little Drummer Boy from The Temptations, I was expecting a lot more flair than this. But I still think they hit a home run with it, even though it wasn't what I really expected from them.
Yeah, I really like it. I don't have a direct reason that I picked this track. Of course, as I mentioned, I'm trying to bring stuff that's a little obscure, or at least the stuff that's two blocks off of Main Street. This one, I just liked it. And I noticed it was the last album on the last song on the B-side of the 1970 album, The Temptations Christmas Card. I have a soft spot for B-sides because they're usually so overlooked. So I just felt like giving it a little love. And when I listened to it and really listened to it, I love that low bass voice of Melvin Franklin. He is absolutely amazing. I tried to see if I could get that low in my range, not even close.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Another thing, so the Temptations, I don't, you can tell me if I'm wrong here. They always remind me of the California Raisins. And I don't know if there was ever an official tie-in, like they were actually singing on behalf of them. I don't think that was the case. Maybe it just sounds so incredibly similar, but it reminds me of that. And I think you and I were probably, I don't know, 11 or 12 years old when that, that came out. So I that just gives me a nice, happy memory.
Yeah, that as well. I think the reason you think that is California Raisins used Marvin Gaye, Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the dance moves from the Raisins.
Okay.
We've seen the Temptations do on a lot of canned footage from like the 60s and stuff.
Well, it's definitely in the style of the Temptations and other Motown artists. Yeah. Here's a neat fact about the Temptations that I didn't know. They have 43 studio albums.
Yeah.
I have never seen a group with that many albums in their discography.
Right. Right. They have, people talk about the 60s, the music of the 60s. And of course it's the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix and things like that. But, you know, the Temptations were such a juggernaut through the 60s. They have probably the most recognizable, one of the most recognizable songs from the first two notes of the song ever. Someone hears the first two notes of that guitar lick from My Girl and they know instantly what it is and who it is, you know, and they have other songs as well that are, you know, Ain't Too Proud to Beg was originally a Temptation song, you know, that people still love today and that the Rolling Stones covered because it was so good. And, you know, they had a Ball of Confusion, which is a big, one of their later songs, kind of late '60s along the lines of, you know, what's going on and that kind of protest song. And the Temptations were, you know, probably it's hard to say that they're overlooked now in the history books as far as music, but you can kind of say that because when you listen to like musical historians, it takes them a while to get to the Temptations, but they put out radio hit after radio hit after radio hit.
Well, if you want Christmas songs, they have plenty of them.
Yes, they do. They have a lot of Christmas songs. And this is going to sound hyperbolic, but I don't know if I found a Christmas song that they've done that I haven't quite enjoyed. Of course, I did preface that by saying they were one of my favorite bands. So they have a lot of songs and I don't know if there's any of them I don't like, to tell you the truth.
The other yardstick that I use is, could I play this? Now, both my grandmothers have passed and I don't have the opportunity to be with them or spend the holidays with them, but this is an album that I could put on. And there's absolutely no question that it would be perfectly fine and acceptable and even make them happy. Mm-hmm. And you can't say that about modern artists.
Right. See, that's a similar benchmark to what I have. When I hear a new Christmas album, Christmas song. We have a few releases and then we don't need to go through which ones and all that. But if they have a new version of a song or an original Christmas song, which is always nice, I always play it. Will this sandwich to my playlist and feel like it belongs?
Yeah.
You know, and of course this song feels like we've heard it, you know, feel, you know, we pulled something off that's, you know, just a few blocks off Main Street, but it feels like we've known it forever.
Sure.
You know, the song's
instantly comfortable with it, even if I've never heard this exact version before.
And I think some of that is because the song we're so familiar with and the voices of the Temptations we're so familiar with. So it's kind of like this marriage of super familiar things to our ears, you know, so.
Well, it's great. So if you want, check out the Temptations. You can go to YouTube if you just want to see what they've done. People put up tons of stuff, and it's just wonderful. Very very relaxing, very soothing. So
I've never seen anybody listen to the Temptations with a frown on their face. I'll tell you,
I don't think so. No,
you know. So yeah, definitely go check out. You know, if you're younger and you don't really know the Temptations very much, go check them out on YouTube. Check out some of their live stuff. It's really great. They were great, not only great vocalists, but they were great performers as well too. They really, really could put on a show.
Cool. But can I pick the next song?
Absolutely. Go ahead, man.
All right. So the next song we're going to listen to is Ave Maria by Stevie Wonder. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. All right, that was Ave Maria by Stevie Wonder. What did you think, Todd?
Ave Maria is one of those Christmas songs that I listen to a lot, but I know it's a prayer and that kind of thing, but it's not one of my favorite Christmas songs. But I like this rendition. Mainly it's Stevie. But normally you hear the song and it's somebody with a big booming voice like Josh Groban or... you know, an old crooner, like, you know, Andy Williams or somebody like that, that's just got this big boom. Well, Stevie's got a wonderful, one of the best voices ever, but it's not a big booming voice, but he still holds his own and doesn't feel like it gets swallowed up. I'm not sure when this was recorded. You have the stats of
this was from the album Someday at Christmas, recorded in 1967.
That I was going to guess it was, you know, mid-60s Stevie, because he sounds young, you know, and I imagine if this was recorded, you know, 73, 74, when he was on his big run of making all those wonderful albums, like in that big run, it sounded a lot different. But the way that the studio band kind of held back and let his voice carry and sing, you hear a lot of natural reverb in the room. And then... you know, you have this song that's real airy and prayerful and reflective. You know, even though this song, it always, no matter who sings the song, it has this reflectiveness to it. I always find myself kind of, I said it's not one of my favorite ones, but every time it comes on, I always feel myself going into this reflective.
I know exactly mode. What you mean, Todd.
And yeah.
And it's not a song I would, you know, like sometimes I'll sing along with the radio or the music. I wouldn't sing along with this song.
Right.
And everything you said, I agree with. And I chose this song for a reason. Uh-huh. As you mentioned, and I'm going to paraphrase you, usually you hear this song sung by someone like Pavarotti or something. And it's a big fat guy in a tuxedo singing, and you know what the song is, and it's a baritone. You know what it's going to sound like when it comes out of their mouth, or it's Andrea Bocelli or something. And sure, those are the, you know, premier versions of this song. Absolutely. I want to hear more of an everyman's version. This is kind of like when you're watching, America's Got Talent or something, and you see an unassuming person come out on stage and then they blow everybody away. I was blown away listening to Stevie Wonder sing this song, not because it's the best version I've ever heard of this, far from it. But as you mentioned, the song has a ton of space and it's slow and it's peaceful. If you listen back, you'll notice there's no percussion. There's no drums in this song. And that struck me. The other thing that I really liked was the harmonica.
Yes.
That was a really interesting feature of the song that I have not, you know, I don't hear Pavarotti playing the harmonica.
That's one thing I was really hit me too, because there's all this space and all this room, and the last thing you think you're going to hear is a harmonica.
Yeah.
But it comes in so subtly and soft. And fits and
it's, it was no tasteful.
No question about that. Stevie playing the harmonica. There's no question about it. And he's, you know, he's just a virtuoso anyway, but it was, it fits. And it's like, how do you get the harmonica to fit in a song like this so well? And there's only one answer, and it's the genius that Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. It's such a unique version of Ave Maria. And it's, I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting and different and a fun listen. And I hope our listeners thought it was, was interesting too.
It is. And of the songs that we have upcoming, this is one, even though the song itself is not one of my favorite, but this is one that I'm putting towards the top of my playlist just because of that reflective quality it has in it.
He was also singing in Latin at the beginning, and it doesn't mean he speaks Latin, but it was still impressive.
Yeah,
you don't hear a lot of the artists do that. Well, of course, Bocelli or something, but not a Motown artist. And I loved that. I thought it blew the lid off some preconceived notions I had about these artists, and I just thought that was great.
Yeah, it is. You know, they learn that stuff phonetically, but still, if I learn Latin phonetically to be able to put the right
The phrasing, cadence, the intonation, all of that. I couldn't
all
do
that to it to express the right emotion, much less sing.
I could
in
butcher Ave Maria in Latin, but not sing it beautifully and lyrically the way he did.
Right. It's just amazing. There's a story of Stevie Wonder when he was a kid. He would hang out at Hitsville, USA, and there in Detroit. And he'd always go in and hang out in the studio with all the great studio musicians in there. And we'll get to those guys later on. And he'd be like, man, I like what you're doing on the keyboard. He'll say that to whoever's playing the piano. And so they'll show him a few thing or two, and he'd disappear for a week, and then he'd come back and he'd have that mastered and even better than that guy showed him, and then he'd be like, I like what you're doing on the drums. And so they'd show him a drum lick and fill and stuff, and he'd disappear for a week or so, and he'd come back and he's playing the drums better than the guy on the recordings and stuff. Yeah. He's just a genius talent, a virtuoso musically, and there's this is 67 at the right at the beginning of his career, and it's no wonder that he's went on to do the things he has done, and I'm sure we'll hopefully continue to do for many, many more years.
Yeah, totally agree. And I said that my parents weren't really into Motown. Not true for Stevie Wonder. My dad loves Stevie Wonder. And we heard these songs. I didn't hear this particular song growing up, but I heard a lot of Stevie Wonder. And, much like anybody else, there's a point in your life in your 20s and 30s where you kind of lose touch with a lot of the things that you grew up with and your nostalgia, because life happens and you're busy with your job and building families and stuff. I don't know if you remember this, Todd, but a couple of years ago, the Apple Christmas commercial that came out was Stevie Wonder and Andrea Day singing Someday at Christmas. And there was something about that commercial that was extremely powerful. And it brought back this flood of memories of growing up in Stevie Wonder and this flood of nostalgia. And it kind of just rekindled my interest in Stevie Wonder as an artist. It's not like I drive around town listening to his music, but it reminded me how beautiful it is. So just wanted to put that one in today. That's why we chose the artist. There are so many other songs that everyone would have known from Stevie for Christmas.
Yeah.
But this one, I hope you didn't.
Yeah. Someday at Christmas is one of those that gets played.
Yep.
Not as much as some songs, but it gets played enough that people know it fairly well, and rightfully so. It's a great Christmas song. But this is definitely one that needs to be added to your playlist as a definite listen to at least two or three times, throughout the Christmas season minimum. So let's move on to one that I've never heard of until we decided to do this album, and that's Purple Snowflakes by Marvin Gaye.
This is going to be something. Buckle up, everybody. This is fun. This is Purple Snowflakes by Marvin Gaye.
Your say that our love is here to stay. We'll be cozy and warm until summer flowers bloom. Here in our nest, we're surely blessed.
Chestnuts roasting
over the heat. Gee, ain't life sweet.
Tootsies toasting,
drifting on air without a care.
All right, that was Purple Snowflakes by Marvin Gaye. I love this song, Todd, and I'm here's my confession. I didn't love this song before you and I started collaborating on what this episode was going to be. I picked this because it was weird, mm-hmm. and it was out there. And I thought, well, that's perfect. That's on brand with what I do at Jingle Jank. Uh-huh. But now that I've listened to this song about 10 times, I really like this song.
Yeah. Yeah, it first time I heard it, I was like, I never heard this. You know, I know Marvin Gaye very well, and you know, his stuff is always top notch. And I listened through the first time, I was like, I don't know if I get it. Yeah. You know, it's like, I don't know if I get it. I don't know even if it's really a Christmas song or not. And then the more I listen to it, the more I'm like, man, I'm just digging that groove in there. There's just something in there that just kept pulling me to it. I even printed out the lyrics to read through the lyrics, you know, when he was singing. And not that you needed to, it's not like any of them were, you know, you can't hear them or anything like that, but sometimes it's just good to see them. And it's like, I don't even know if it's a happy song or sad song, to tell you the truth.
Well, you know? it's considered psychedelic soul. And I was not familiar with that before I started digging in to this song. I knew it had like an overtone and a feeling that reminded me of the Doors and some of that stuff from the same era. But I didn't really know, you know, Purple Snowflakes. I mean, that sounds like some kind of weird acid trip or something.
Right.
I mean, that's probably, you know, based in some sort of truth there.
Yeah.
Here's the fascinating thing about this song. So this song was written and recorded as Purple Snowflakes, but it was not released until 1992 when it came out on a Christmas compilation album. The song that this was released as is called Pretty Little Baby. Listen to this really quick clip of that. So it's the same exact song, and that's a hit by Marvin Gaye that's been out, well, I don't even know the year that it came out, but it looks like it might have been in 1961. Mm-hmm. So this song sat on the shelf for 31 years in its original Purple Snowflakes form. Right. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. It's certainly makes this interesting, and that's why I brought it today.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I just think they probably just didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, early 60s, things were a lot more candy canes and bubble gums and that kind of thing. And this is a little bit more.
When did Marvin Gaye die?
Let me hit the Google machines. It was late 70s, early 80s.
Okay. So I'm wondering if this is one of those things that an artist becomes a lot more popular after they pass on. And somebody found this and said, hey, this has never been released. This is really interesting. Maybe it wouldn't have been well received in his time, but after we didn't have much choice anymore, we didn't have any new music from Marvin Gaye, the public was ready to hear something different.
Yeah, 1984 was the year he passed away.
Okay.
And so that's probably been about right if this was released in, let's say, 92.
92, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been...
Yeah, there was a Christmas compilation album called Christmas in the City, and that was the first time the public at large was able to hear this original Purple Snowflakes version. So,
yeah,
a lot of fun. Not a lot to say about it, but there is something catchy about it.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that is Marvin Gaye's vocals, too, because he's just one of those vocalists that every time he sings, it's almost like you lean in to hear what he's saying.
Yeah.
I've talked before about like a storyteller, a singer that's a storyteller, and I don't, Marvin Gaye's not known as a storyteller when he sings, but I think he really is. You know, we look at his, like his biggest hits, you know, his version of I Heard It Through the Grapevine or What's Going On. They're all, those two songs are always telling a story. And I think Marvin Gaye is one of those vocalists, when you hear him sing, even a song, you know, like Purple Snowflakes, your ear wants to kind of do, you know, you can't see it, but your ear kind of wants to lean in to hear what he's saying.
Yeah.
And see where he's taking you on through this song.
My first listen, I did not like it. But then I noticed after listening to it a bunch of times, I was starting to hum along with it. Uh-huh. And I was vacuuming the rug and I was kind of singing it to myself. Oh, wait a minute. Something's interesting here.
Yeah. And, yeah. It's a real nice, easy melody. It's not anything complicated, which is always better, because when things get complicated, then our ears get confused and want to reject it. And it's kind of got this peaceful feeling with that little fluttery bell thing in the back. It kind of has this peacefulness to it as well.
It does. I was thinking while you were talking there, I was just thinking about these songs in general, these Motown songs. They are very peaceful. The tempo is great. You know, it's probably 80 beats per minute or less. Sometimes you turn on Christmas music and it's a wall of sound. And I know Phil Spector popularized that. That's not what I mean. I mean, it's like an oral assault. Like it's just, you know, drums and horns and singing and all this stuff. But you turn this on and it's just kind of like you're exhaling. And I like it. There's a time and a place for all kinds of music. This is not what I would listen to get out of bed in the morning. But man, you know, after a nice dinner or I was relaxing or something, boy, I would light up the fire, watch the snowfall in the window. I could listen to these. This is wonderful. Right.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because one of the things that the musicians, the studio band for Motown through the 60s in Detroit, one of their biggest things, and I'm sure all bands are like this, but their biggest things is each musician knows their part. And they all want to play the right part of the song, even if the right part is not to play. Then they take a lot of pride in that. Even if your part is to hit a triangle one time at a certain moment in the song, then they're taking that like it is the most important part. Each musician, you know, said their part was, they took it like their part was the most important part. And when you do that, then the music really happens.
Yeah, there's a restraint.
There's restraint. There's a lot of, you know,
it's like they say, it's not the notes, it's the space between the notes and what you do with it. And I couldn't agree more. This is just so nice. Do you want to go into Winter Wonderland by the Funk Brothers? We're talking about the Motown in-house bands.
Yes. Yes. All right. And this is one I specifically picked because, to my knowledge, I think it might be the only song that the Funk Brothers have a credit on as the artists.
All right, we'll get into that in a minute. This is Winter Wonderland by the Funk Brothers, and just be prepared. This one's instrumental, so there's nothing wrong with your speakers if you don't hear anything. That was Winter Wonderland by the Funk Brothers. Todd, since you chose this one, why don't you go first?
Okay. I might go off on a little bit of tangent here, but just bear with me. I picked this song because the Funk Brothers have the credit. And if you don't know, the Funk Brothers are the name of all the musicians that were the studio band for Motown Records through the Detroit area, which is 58, 59 through 1970. And they called themselves the Funk Brothers. They, you know, were multiple keyboardists and drummers and bass players, horn players, vibes, all that good stuff. And they, at one point through the mid 60s, Hitsville USA was running 24/7 cranking out these hits, you know, so it was a rotating cast, but they were always the Funk Brothers. And there was this brotherhood between them. There was a documentary called Standing in the Shadows of Motown, came out in 2002-ish, I believe. Once you're done listening to this podcast, go to Vudu or someplace and rent it or buy it and watch it. Their story is amazing, absolutely amazing. These musicians live in complete obscurity. They, you know, at the time they didn't get paid what musicians that work in the studio get paid now. So a lot of them were, you know, they live, you know, some of them in pretty nasty poverty situations. But as a band, they played on more number one hits than the Beach Boys, Elvis, and the Beatles combined.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and
so these are the unsung heroes of Motown.
Right, absolutely. And most of them, if not all of them, have passed on, unfortunately. But these guys were what shaped Motown. These guys were what made the Temptations as far as musically, because, you know, we've talked about the music giving space for the vocals and talked about the groovy bass lines and things. And these guys were so excellent at what they did. But nobody really knows who they are. In fact, we talked about My Girl, and Robert White was the name of the guitarist that wrote the opening guitar lick for My Girl. And he passed away before the documentary was released, although they did have some interview footage with him. And the guy that made the documentary told the story. He was sitting in a restaurant with Robert White, and My Girl comes on the radio over the Muzak, and right when the waiter was there, and Robert White went to say something to the waiter, but backed off. And the producer for the documentary said, "Robert, you was going to tell him you wrote that, didn't you?" And Robert says, "Yeah, but he wouldn't have believed me anyway."
Oh, wow.
And it's just such heartbreaking. So this is kind of my tribute to some unsung heroes of some guys that were really behind the scenes that got, you know, left out in the cold.
Yeah, and there was no internet then. You're not going to look right up and find who a lot of these people were. I looked on Wikipedia. There were 13 official members listed. But then there are dozens and dozens of additional members.
Right. And in 1970, Berry Gordy up and moved Motown to Los Angeles and left all those guys behind. And
so was that the end of Motown as we knew it?
That for the 60s, yes. Motown Records continued on, you know, Jackson 5 and Diana Ross solo stuff and all the way to, you know, like Boyz II Men, I think, was officially a Motown, you know, signing, but probably in name only. But
yeah,
that was really the end of when you think of Motown, you think of the Detroit era. And once they moved to LA, it just never was the same. There was a few musicians that tried to go out to LA to stay playing with Motown, especially James Jamerson, the bass player, but it just wasn't the same vibe, same groove. The music scene was changing, and that was that. And I, Winter Wonderland's, I like the song, it's fine, but when I saw this and got to hear those guys play instrumental with no one singing over the top of it, it was just, of course, I know who's playing because of, you know, being so into it, and I could, it just gives me a rare chance to sit back and listen to those guys play a song without it being, you know, under a vocal or anything like that up front and center. And
minus the knowledge that you just brought to us though, Todd, I don't think this song has a particularly strong Motown feel to it.
No.
It just sounds like a wonderful instrumental version
right
of Winter Wonderland.
Right. And, I think a lot of that is they were all like jazz musicians.
Yeah.
And so and a lot of the Motown groove was based on lyrics and melody. So this was just kind of, I think I can't say for sure because I wasn't there, but this almost is kind of like, why don't you guys do something? And they probably ran through this two or three times and said, okay, we got an extra song.
I'm glad you said that this was the only song that the Funk Brothers were credited on. Mm-hmm. I did hear you right, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That explains why during the research, I couldn't find any album or anything specifically credited to the Funk Brothers. Of course, they were the in-house band for Motown. Mm-hmm. So here's another interesting fact on this one. And I only noticed this right now. And I'm looking at my own notes. You think I would have put this together. Uh-huh. This song was released on the 1992 album Christmas in the City, the same one that we just talked about with Purple Snowflakes. So I have a guess that somewhere around 1992, someone dug in the back of a closet, found a whole bunch of great stuff and said, let's put out this album called Christmas in a City. So we got Purple Snowflakes. We got Winter Wonderland by the Funk Brothers. Now I'm very curious what else is on that album. And I'm really going to have to check it out.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you said that because I was just like, this sounds like a song that was made and just kind of held on, you know, for something extra kind of. And then it's in the same release date as the Marvin Gaye song, which was a song they made and just held on to.
Yeah, they wouldn't have published it at the time. It's like who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Mm-hmm. You know, when that guy passed on, now they're publishing like a half finished work of his because everyone would just love to have anything else, Douglas Adams, anything else by them. So now you get this extra stuff by Marvin Gaye or the Funk Brothers. And I'm sad that it took so long and the people didn't get their due, but I'm glad at least we're talking about it now.
Right. Absolutely. And like you said, there's nothing super particularly interesting about this particular version. It's just who the song is by. And as soon as I was first time I scrolled through the song list of Ultimate Motown Christmas and saw the Funk Brothers were credited for the song, it's like, we're doing that one. Yeah. I don't care what it sounds like. We're doing that one because
I wish they had a whole album. I would listen to this thing front to back. Well, you know, metaphorically there, I would listen to it up and down all day long. I love, and you mentioned jazz and that's probably why I like this so much. I really like Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Herbie Hancock, you know, that era. And this is just so beautiful. Yeah. I love this.
Well, you know, I don't know if they were just so into the artists, but you think about this, the 60s were such a hot time for jazz, you know, on top of all the other music that was going on. It seems like they could have had the Funk Brothers put out this really groovy pop jazz stuff that kind of bridged the gap between the pop of the 60s and jazz that I think a lot of people would have gravitated towards.
It would have been great.
If you could have got some of that great, you know, Motown sound and some like legit jazz tunes, I think they might've missed the opportunity on that. You know,
we're looking backwards with the luxury of our experience and the totality of what happened.
Right.
So who knows what we would have thought back then. Right. I'm just thrilled that we have it now. So that's the Funk Brothers. You can seek out that song, but really, as Todd said, just go listen to any Motown and you're going to be hearing them. So
yeah, you definitely will be. And check out Standing in the Shadows of Motown. It's a documentary. It's easy to find on streaming services.
Yeah, put that in the show notes if you can. I'd like to remember that.
I absolutely will.
I'm going to forget.
Yep, I'll definitely put it in the show notes. And in fact, I watched that documentary again this past week. It's been a few years since I've seen it and studying up for this. I was like, I need to watch that again. And there's live music on there, and these guys are all in their late 60s, early 70s, and they're playing live with, you know, people like Ben Harper and stuff like that.
Oh, neat.
Man, their musicianship's still so good. It's just like so incredible.
Yeah, we owe a lot of modern music to the road that they paved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if it's okay with you, I'd like to pick the next song.
Absolutely, man.
I'm going to pick Merry Christmas Baby by the Four Tops.
All right.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Merry Christmas, baby. Sure did treat me nice. I say merry, merry, merry Christmas, baby. Sure did treat me nice. Gave me a diamond ring for Christmas. Now I'm living in paradise. Yes, I am. Got good music on my radio. I say I'm feeling mighty fine. Got good music on my radio. I wanna hug and kiss you, baby. Standing beneath the mistletoe.
All right, now that was Merry Christmas Baby by the Four Tops, and I have a feeling that your listeners are very confused right now because they are thinking, I thought this was supposed to be a Motown episode.
Right.
That was the blues.
Yes.
But it's the Four Tops, who are undeniably Motown artists.
Right.
What did you think of it?
I don't know when this particular song was released. My guess is it's not going to be a Detroit era
Absolutely Motown not.
And song. Very, because that's
very good. It was from the 1995 album, Christmas Here With You. So this is our latest entry.
Yep. Because I only heard one of the Four Tops in that. And the other thing is the bass player is has a overdrive or a fuzz on his bass. So I knew it was at least late 70s, maybe even more modern than that. And it's just 12-bar blues, which you would expect for this song to be, and the Motown I know and love, I'm sure they could play mean 12-bar blues, but that's not what they did.
They probably grew up playing mean 12-bar blues. Now, I picked this song for a reason, and you just brought some more information to the table that makes it make a lot more sense. The note that I wrote here is, compared to a famous song by the Four Tops like Baby, I Need Your Lovin', this feels very gritty. And it doesn't feel like the Four Tops. That was one of the reasons I chose it, because it doesn't sound like what I expected at all.
Right. It is. I bet it's almost just kind of like a return to form kind of thing, because I'm sure, the members of the Four Tops before they were the Four Tops, and, they were singing all the big hits. This is probably what they were singing, for fun, at home, and similar to what they were probably singing at church, and that kind of thing. And this was probably just kind of a return to form, something they can kind of do with their eyes closed, that kind of thing.
The thought of that makes my heart smile. I'm going to go with your idea here of they wanted to do something that they just enjoyed. Versus what I had in mind was like, oh, maybe they ran out of money and forgot to pay their tax bills, so now they were out touring and because they had to, not because they wanted to. But well, I like that, your idea better.
The money grab is putting Four Tops as the artist instead of just the single vocalist on there.
Yeah.
That's where the money grab is. But I enjoyed this. I love Merry Christmas Baby. I enjoy it in all its versions and renditions. It's one of my favorites.
And I'm glad you said that, because one of the reasons I brought this was when I see the title Merry Christmas Baby, I have an extremely narrow idea of what I'm expecting to hear, and that's the Otis Redding version. I have a clip.
Okay.
Merry Christmas Baby, should it treat me nice? Merry Christmas Baby.
And that's really nice. And that's what I think of when you tell me the title, Merry Christmas Baby. This version by the Four Tops, or the One Top, I guess, I'm not sure, was very, very different. And I like things that are different. There's also, we didn't get to play the beginning of the song because there's a very long intro. We could only play so much. There's this wonderful harmonica riff at the beginning. I have a quick clip. I just thought that was great. I loved that. And that's the first thing you hear in this Four Tops version. It immediately drew me in and got me interested. My ears perked up when I heard that, because I maybe it's just another one of these examples of you don't hear a lot of harmonica in Christmas music. Right. So, you know, it was, you know, the ambiguity of it shocked me out of complacency. Yeah. But I just thought this was a lot of fun. I'm disappointed to find out it's not really the Four Tops, but I still like the song.
Yeah, I like the song. It's when I see the song title "Merry Christmas Baby," it's exactly what I expect to hear, but it was not the Four Tops I expected to hear. Which is a little disappointing, but then once you listen to it a few times, you're like, this is really good in its own right. You know, it stands up with all the other versions, the Otis Redding version. Every time I think of this song, I always think of Elvis. That's kind of my go-to version of this song, which is basically the same as this song. It's 12 bar blues and it's just Elvis instead.
Yeah. I went looking. I swore after listening to this that Stevie Ray Vaughan had done a version of Merry Christmas Baby. He had not.
That'd been great.
Yeah, it would have been absolutely wonderful. There is some other version floating around the back of my head that I haven't been able to nail down who I'm thinking of. It's probably going to happen, you know, at 2 a.m. I'm going to sit bolt upright in the bed and think, I figured it out. I got to call Todd. And I promise not to.
Oh, you can.
Let's not.
I don't mind.
So, so that was Merry Christmas Baby by the Four Tops, the most recent version on here. And I picked that one because it was so very different, not because it was so great. It's perfectly fine. As I said, I find it to be very gritty. The vocals are gritty. You mentioned the overdrive on the bass. That has a dirtier quality to it, and that's kind of fun. It's a little crunchy, and that was neat. But it's not what I would go seeking out without these constraints that we're putting on. You know why we brought this music today.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's one of those. If you're just listening to some streaming radio station for Christmas, it comes on. You're like, this is nice. You would never guess it was the Four Tops.
Yeah.
You know, but you're like, this is pretty good. You know, you won't like jump out of your seat or nothing, but you'll listen all the way through, be happy with it, and then move on to the next song.
I've told this story in our community a lot that I like to listen to Sirius XM Christmas station throughout the year. They still offer their holiday traditions. They do it on their streaming. You can't do it in the car if you have a satellite radio or anything, but they do offer holiday traditions, and they have an incredible mix of music. And, you know, my wife even commented like, I've never heard this song before. I've never heard this. And for a family like mine to have never heard a Christmas song that's being played is very rare. So this is the kind of thing I would expect to hear. And, you know, I've used, it used to be Shazam and now it's just Siri. I've used it all the time and just, you know, hold the button and say, what song is this? And find out, you know, that it's, well, the Four Tops. Well, how about that? That's another way that I find a lot of my songs. So, so I'm glad you mentioned that. We only have one more song today.
Right.
This one, spoiler, it's my favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it really is. It puts the biggest smile on my face. So this is Jingle Bells by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Dashing through the snow, in a one-horse open sleigh. Over the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtails ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing.
right, Todd, I see you smiling the same way I am. What did you think?
Of all the songs we covered, this is the most Motown of all the songs. When you think of Motown, the Detroit area, this is it. You hear that James Jamerson playing the bass. That is no doubt in my mind, that's James Jamerson on the bass. You hear the three guitar parts. There's one guitar player, I can't think of his name right now, have to forgive me, but he always plays on the backbeat. It's always that wink, wink on the backbeat. You hear that. You hear, you know, I think that's Pistol Pete on that particular drum set. I can't say for sure, but it's just all the sounds in the band that you hear on a Motown, and then it's Smokey Robinson singing above them, and it's Motown through and through, and you just can't help but to smile, and it's yes. Jingle Bells, which is a double smile, and it's just a nice, groovy, upbeat Christmas song that can only make you happy.
I totally agree. The smile was totally there, and I'll play a quick clip of what really drew me in. It's the whee! Listen to this.
Yeah.
Dashing through the snow, yeah.
I just love that. It made me smile immediately. It made the song feel light. This is from the 1970 album, A Season for Miracles. So this is old school, a little bit toward the end, but you're right. Yeah. Smokey Robinson. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more iconic Motown singer. And right. I don't know the history of Smokey Robinson, the Miracles without Smokey Robinson. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be a whole lot there, and I didn't get into it.
Right.
But I'm sure glad they came together for this song.
Right. Absolutely. I think their kind of thing was, it's kind of like the male version of the Supremes and then Diana Ross and the Supremes and then Diana Ross. It's just
okay.
one of those is not like the others and stood out, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. But yeah, I'm surprised this was cut in 1970. This seems much, much earlier, like a much, much earlier recording to me from what I've listened to in Motown. So,
Well, now, I just did an episode recently on disco on my show, and it was extremely hard to nail down the actual recording date, the recording artist, because a lot of things ended up on either compilation albums and things like that. So I don't know anything about the 1970 album, A Season for Miracles. For all I know, this could have been recorded in 1962. I have no idea. Take that with a grain of salt, and you have a lot of knowledge about this. So I would trust your opinion over a couple minutes of Wikipedia searches on my behalf. Right.
Yeah. When I first heard it, I was thinking 63, 64, just based on the musicians I knew I heard in there, you know, cause that is undoubtedly James Jamerson on the bass, undoubtedly. Okay. And towards late session Detroit, Bob Babbitt was a little bit more on the bass. Because of the workload involved, and James Jamerson really was just sticking with Marvin Gaye, playing for Marvin Gaye more than anybody else. But that's undoubtedly James Jamerson on the bass there. And it's possible. I can't say 100% for sure, but it's possible it was recorded earlier. And just, I guess we've discovered they have a tendency to record stuff and put it up for a while. So,
yeah. Now I have an observation here about the song Jingle Bells. Uh-huh. And you can disagree with this. I don't hear it covered as often as a lot of other songs. And I don't know if that's because people think, Jingle Bells, we leave that one alone. Everybody knows Jingle Bells. We need to do something more interesting. Right. I was really glad to find a cover of Jingle Bells, especially one where they brought this much character and lightheartedness. They're laughing in the background. And it sounds genuine.
Yeah, it does. Now that you say that, I'm trying to think back on, you know, more modern Christmas albums. In the last new Christmas album that I know that has a Jingle Bells cover on it is Gwen Stefani's.
Oh, okay.
And it's a really good version of Jingle Bells. But other than that.
Not a lot of them come to mind. They may be out there for all I know, or they're on albums that don't get played.
I think what it is I think people are afraid that everything's been done with it. Yeah. You know, the chord changes aren't, you know, that crazy.
Well, I'm glad you said that because the chorus was sung differently in this. And I don't have the notes and I don't have the actual clip of it. You can go back and listen. They do something a little bit different vocally and they bring something original to it. And that also stuck out.
Yeah. They definitely, Smokey Robinson definitely changed the melody just a little bit. I think in one part where you're supposed to go up or down, he went opposite.
Yeah, that's what I noticed as well.
Yeah, it's like he went opposite of what was normally there. And I think
all the way, and he went up with it. And you normally hear people go down. And I couldn't, I wouldn't even try to do a Smokey Robinson like falsetto here. So me I just spared everybody. You're all welcome for that.
And I think a lot of people don't cover it because everybody's put Jingle Bells on it.
It's hard to do Jingle Bells in an original way too.
Right.
That isn't just a rehash of everything else.
I think that's why it scares people away is it's been done every which way and sideways as a cover. So, I'll look for it.
But this is one of the reasons I love Christmas music is, you have a certain extent of, what to expect. I know where the lyrics are going to go. I know what the melody generally is. And I want to hear an artist's individual imprint and take on a standard that I know very well. Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example of how it totally exceeded my expectations of how Jingle Bells could be sung and what it sounded like. So hats off to you, Smokey Robinson.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a feeling maybe not this year or next, but for anybody that's keeping track, write this down. I have a feeling that there will be a resurgence of Jingle Bells in the year 2022.
Yep. You heard Christmas, it here first, folks.
Christmas predictions sure to go wrong. But I have a feeling it'll come back around because it seems like in the late 90s, there was lots of Jingle Bells covers, and maybe it was just lots of people doing Jingle Bells still.
Well, I didn't know I had room for Jingle Bells in my repertoire anymore. I thought there's like Perry Como maybe or Frank Sinatra. I can't remember who it was. And then maybe Vince Guaraldi. Well, now I got another one that I really like.
Right. Well, and then I always, a lot of people like the Brian Setzer Orchestra version of Jingle Bells. And when I think of that, I don't think of the one off his Christmas album, where he's singing and stuff. I think of the one that he recorded for the, Merry Axmas that came out in the late 90s where it's all instrumental and guitar solo stuff.
Oh, I have that album. I think like Joe Satriani and Gary Hoey. Same year that Ho Ho Hoey came out, I think, or within a year or two of that.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get together and do a Merry Axmas.
Yep, that's right. A hardcore metal Christmas. Yeah, that's
right. But that was a really cool album, It had like Joe Perry playing Blue Christmas and stuff on it. And so I always thought of that because that is basically the same version, big band version of Jingle Bells with Brian Whalen on his guitar as well as he does. And then, but then he does it for his own Christmas album and adds the vocals and it's like a whole different, thing, but just as cool. And it's almost the standard of what can you do with it and add to it.
Yeah, so there are 51 tracks on this album, this Motown album. We picked 6, and these are subjective. So I would encourage listeners to go out, just check out this album on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Music, wherever you find your stuff. I'm sure it's not even on YouTube. I don't know. Go find your favorites. Maybe you think we're just a bunch of clowns who picked the 6 worst ones.
Right.
Admittedly, we picked some of the ones that you probably wouldn't know. There are many, many songs that are absolute Christmas standards, like 100%.
All the Jackson 5 songs, Christmas songs that you hear
like
quite
often. There's like 5 Stevie Wonder tracks on this album. Right.
They're on there. There's plenty of Diana Ross and plenty of Diana Ross and Supremes. And
we could have done this for hours, really.
We could have sit here and went through all 51 tracks and tore them apart and went on and on and on. But
hey, there's an idea.
We would have had a 4-hour podcast.
Yeah, that's more of a streaming radio service at that point, isn't it?
Right. So, but this was a lot of fun going through Motown.
I'd love to come back sometime. We'll pick another genre and hit me up.
Yes.
When you're desperate for ideas in, I don't know, April or something, I'll still be listening. So don't worry there.
Definitely, man. I'm definitely going to have you back to do a Christmas conversations where we just kind of sit down and see where the conversation takes us about Christmas. I'm sure we'll get in the music and things like that.
I would enjoy the heck out of that.
And we'll definitely do that. We'll definitely get into some more music. Maybe we'll do that Merry Xmas one.
I would really enjoy that. That's got to be some kind of a strange bonus episode because I imagine that it's slightly outside the purview of a lot of your listeners.
Yeah.
But it would be so much fun if you're musically inclined. I bet you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, because don't take this the wrong way, but I kind of my heart leaped a little bit when you knew that album. I was like, oh, somebody else that knows what that album is.
It's you and me. That's about it. You know, if you don't mind me plugging my show for a couple
absolutely.
Minutes.
I was going to ask you, go ahead and tell us about Jingle Jank and where we can find you on the socials. And
so you can thank quarantine and, you know, you can't thank quarantine. You have quarantine to thank for my show even originating. I had a ton of free time on my hands and I just wanted to do something fun and original. I love Tinsel Tunes, the podcast by Dwayne Bailey, but I didn't want to just do another, you know, rip off of what he's doing. So I found something unique, and that was to go to YouTube and find obscure Christmas music. And my best friend from high school, Jay, he and I have been friends for 30 years now. You know, we would trade a lot of these links back and forth and have you heard this one? And a lot of it started as silly ones or some of them are kind of tasteless, but I realized that, you know, we had an opinion on a lot of these songs and we were really digging things up that I had never heard of. And I'd find stuff that he had never heard of. And he had done a podcast with his wife, you know, for family and friends for a long time. And I said, hey, you know, would you want to pull that microphone out of the drawer maybe? And we could do this together. And luckily he said yes. So each week, Jay and I we come up with a theme. For example, our last show was on disco Christmas music. The one before that was yacht rock Christmas music. So we'll come up with a theme and then we'll find at least five songs from YouTube, specifically from YouTube. And we do that so that it's very easy to share the links. You don't have to worry that, oh, well, yeah, it's on Spotify, but if you don't have Spotify, you're out of luck. Everybody can get to a YouTube link in some way or another. And it's really the same music that you'd find anywhere else in a lot of cases. And the discoverability on YouTube is also great. I can search for anything and start, you know, wandering through people's playlists and really find some amazing stuff. So we officially say that we're looking for weird, wild, wacky, and whiny Christmas music, but what it really is obscure and offbeat. As I mentioned earlier, if you've heard the song, that's not really what we're going for. We're trying to find that crazy stuff that you've never heard. Now, some of it is awful, like just horrid. Other stuff, we did an episode on ska punk Christmas music, and now Jay and I both love ska punk because we were late teens in the 90s, and that was popular then. And none of that's, I wouldn't say any of those songs were bad. That was just discovery. That was, hey, did you know of this band? Did you know of this band? So in that instance, hopefully people just heard, you know, found some new artists that they had never heard of and enjoyed it a lot. So we try to mix it up. I was warned early on, don't just dump on every artist because your podcast is going to turn, it's going to feel very negative and it's not going to be a lot of fun. So we do try to mix it up. We keep things G-rated on there so it's family friendly. There's, you know, no swearing. We don't put any songs on that have an objectionable content or anything like that. And honestly, Todd, we're just having a blast.
Mm-hmm.
We're so blessed that people are responding well to it and enjoying it, and we get so much great feedback. But if nobody listened, I would still do the show because it's for me and Jay. That's what we're doing it for. The fact mm-hmm. that other people bother to listen or even enjoy it is just gravy on top of the potatoes. We're so thrilled about that, and we're having a real good time. I hope to have you on. Now that I have a little bit more of your background, maybe you're the perfect co-host to do something like Heavy Metal Christmas something like that, which is a really weird topic. Not mm-hmm. every episode is going to be like, oh, I love that music, so I should listen to Jingle Jank. I would not be offended if you looked at the title and said, nope, not this week, and just hit delete and moved on with your life.
Yeah.
But I think we're doing our job if we find just crazy stuff. And heavy metal is one that I've been thinking about for a while because I don't really know how to approach the subject right. Mm-hmm. It's done, and there's so much heavy metal Christmas music out there, mm-hmm. shockingly. So the well is very deep on that. So that's just an example. There's a lot of other stuff. We're going to do an episode this weekend on songs that feature Santa Claus in outer space. And my gosh, there are so many of them. I don't know why this became a common topic for people to write songs about, but it did. I think at last count, I had 28 songs on my list to pick from. And I was kind of worried, you know, sometimes what I'll do is I'll, you know, go through YouTube, find stuff that I like, throw it into a spreadsheet. And then I'll start to refine the spreadsheet. And I noticed the word space kept coming up. And I thought, okay, well, there's probably something here. There's probably an episode, but oh, I only have like 4 songs. And I really want to have at least 5 and maybe more if we can. And then some other people in the community really opened the floodgates. And someone sent me a list of like 23 songs, and they're all space related. So that, if that's just going to be a weird topic that we cover. And I hope it's as much fun as I'm thinking it's going to be, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm game to come over on the Jingle Jank and talk about metal or whatever you guys want to talk about. I'm one of those, you know, there's a lot of people that say they listen to all kinds of music, and I'm kind of one of those rare guys, as I'll say that, but I actually mean it, you know, so I.
Yeah, we're going to do, we'll do a rap episode sometime. We'll do a hip hop episode. Those aren't my preferred genres of music, but they're still interesting.
Right. Oh yeah. There's still a lot of art and stuff in there, but for my listeners, all the links to Jingle Jank on the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that will be in the show notes.
Yeah, you can just go to jinglejank.com. That's the easiest way.
Okay.
And you can find links to all our socials. You can find our email address.
Yeah.
Send us a topic if you want. Email me telling me I'm terrible at this. That's fine, too. I just love to hear from people, and it's very fulfilling to get that feedback. And you know what, Todd, you and I forgot one of the most important things that I do on my show, because what we did today, you and I, with this Motown is very similar. Like this could have been a Motown episode of Jingle Jank.
Right.
We didn't say what our favorite song of the day was. We each get to pick. So I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. What was your favorite song of the 6 that we played today?
Well, I really want to pick Winter Wonderland by the Funk Brothers just because of what it means to me. But the song that made me smile the most, and you saw it there at the end, was Smokey Robinson's and the Miracles.
Yeah, Jingle Bells,
Because it was just quintessential Motown. It's the Motown that I grew up listening to and love so dearly.
Now, I think I have a tie here because I think the Jingle Bells song made me smile the most. But it's tied with Purple Snowflakes just because of its uniqueness. And since you picked Jingle Bells, I'm going to pick Purple Snowflakes by Marvin Gaye as my standout track of the week. So that was fun. I just wanted to make sure we got that in there because it's kind of the signature of what we do. It's not really that important, but you know, there's a chance that I might at the end of the season, I don't know, recap all of our favorite picks and then try to come up with the season's best or something. I don't know.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Maybe you can make them a playlist or something like that
for people too. Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I can't thank you enough for having me today. Thank you to all the listeners who have put up with us for over an hour or however long this is going to come out to be. This was so much fun.
For my listeners out there, I've been a listener of Jingle Jank since their very first episode, which was celebrities that had Christmas songs or Christmas albums.
Yep.
And it's been such an enjoyable podcast, a breath of fresh air, tackling the subject of Christmas music in a different way.
If you want to hear Regis Philbin sing a Christmas song, come on over to our first episode.
It's a really entertaining show. Scott and Jay do a fantastic job, and you'll go over there and you'll discover something new each and every time. And I want to encourage all my listeners to head over to jinglejank.com. And like I said, all that will be in the show notes. And Scott,
thank you. Thank you, Todd. That's very nice of you to say. you've been a cheerleader for me since we first started. I think you were one of the first two people to give me positive feedback, and that meant a lot to me and definitely made me want to keep going. And you introduced me to a lot of great people in our community as well on the Christmas Podcast Network.
Well, it was my honor, not to keep blowing smoke at you, but when I heard that first episode, I just knew you guys were on the right track to something. I could just tell in the way you guys put it together. And it's been an honor to have you guys a part. And everybody head over to Jingle Jank and give them a listen. And Scott, thanks so much for joining me here on Christmas Clatter. I'm sure this will not be the last time you'll be on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks to all the listeners. I really appreciate you all letting me be on. And I look forward to being back in the future.
Thank you for listening to Christmas Clatter. Please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Join us on Facebook and Instagram at Christmas Clatter Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Clatter Podcast. Send us an email at ChristmasClatterPodcast@gmail.com. Visit our website at ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. And as always, remember to keep Christmas hope alive every day.
Thank you for listening to the Christmas Podcast Network.
Christmas Clatter is proud to partner with one of our favorite companies, Shady Rays, over at ShadyRays.com. Shady Rays has been the only sunglasses I've used for years now. A lot of you guys know I carry mail for a living, so through the rain, snow, the wind, sleet, sun, you name it, I've carried through it, and even through vacations in the Rockies and on the beach. I've always had my Shady Rays with me. I'm very particular about my sunglasses and love my Shady Rays. They fit great, they're durable, and they're reasonably priced. On top of that, they have a great lifetime warranty that you really need to check out, and it is as good as they say it is. But more importantly, if you buy a pair of sunglasses, that also buys 20 meals for the hungry through Feeding America, which I just love it when companies are have a conscience and have a charitable aspect to them. And you, as a Christmas Clatter listener, go over to ShadyRays.com, use promo code XmasClatter and checkout to receive 25% off and pick up a great pair of sunglasses for you or a gift for someone you love. ShadyRays.com. Promo code XmasClatter for 25% off. Shady Rays, now the official sunglasses of Christmas.